Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. The Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith.
Hello. Last week, I mentioned a recent attack on me by a Jewish organization, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. I gave this as an example of the way the Jews are able to use the mass media in America to serve their purposes. The specific point I made was that it is not necessary for all of the newspaper owners and editors and all of the local television station owners to be Jews in order for all of them to slavishly follow the Anti-Defamation League's party line. This is a very important point. A point essential for us to understand if we want to have a free society. And I'll elaborate on it now. I mentioned last week that when the Anti-Defamation League, or ADL for short, handed out press releases on September 24th to newspapers and other media, in which they said that the organization I head, the National Alliance, is, quote, the single most dangerous organized hate group in America, close quote, and that we are linked to bank robberies, bombings, and murders all over the country. Virtually all of the media simply printed these wild charges without checking them for accuracy. Of all the hundreds of newspapers which printed the ADL's charges, only one, West Virginia's Charleston Gazette, even bothered to call me first and ask for my comments. Some of the newspapers, in paraphrasing the ADL's press release, even managed to exaggerate the ADL's lies. For example, the Tampa Tribune began its news story on September 25th with the line, quote, a domestic terrorist group with a following in Tampa poses an ongoing threat of violence, the Anti-Defamation League said in a report issued Thursday, end of quote. The ADL's words, most dangerous organized hate group, have been transformed by the Tampa Tribune into domestic terrorist group. That's a significant change. Hate group is an ill-defined term which you can apply to any organization with whose policies or doctrines you disagree. Groups opposed to abortion, for example, have been called hate groups by feminists and their supporters. Terrorist group, on the other hand, really suggests a group which actually engages in terrorist activities such as bombings, assassinations, and the like. Then there's the Los Angeles Times, which in its September 25th story, based on the ADL's press release, stated, quote, the group's activities, that's the National Alliance's activities, including violent crimes such as robberies and bombings, have been uncovered in at least 26 states, end of quote. I'll repeat that. The group's activities, including violent crimes such as robberies and bombings. The Los Angeles Times certainly makes it sound as if I'm the head of an organization which actually commits violent crimes such as robberies and bombings as a matter of course, doesn't it? That was the Los Angeles Times interpretation of the ADL's list of, quote, criminal incidents linked to the National Alliance and its propaganda, end of quote. What the ADL's list actually suggests is that the perpetrators of various bombings and murders may be linked to the National Alliance by having read a book or a pamphlet published by the National Alliance, or perhaps by having listened to one of my broadcasts. For example, one of the incidents in the ADL's list of criminal incidents linked to the National Alliance reads, quote, December 1995, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Two soldiers stationed at Fort Bragg who were avowed neo-Nazis and reportedly read National Alliance propaganda murdered an African-American couple, end of quote. As I pointed out last week, Neither I nor anyone else in the National Alliance had ever heard of James Burmeister before he shot a convicted black drug dealer and the dealer's girlfriend to death in Fayetteville in December 1995. But it certainly is possible that Burmeister listened to an American Distant Voices broadcast or read some publication of the National Alliance. There are a lot of our publications in circulation. Burmeister also may have read Reader's Digest, or the Bible, or Newsweek magazine, for all I know. There's certainly a lot of criminal activity described in those publications. Anyway, the Los Angeles Times interpretation of the ADL's claim that the National Alliance is linked through its publications to various criminal acts is that we did it. We committed the criminal acts ourselves. The paper said flatly that our activities include, quote, violent crimes such as robberies and bombings. And nobody from the Los Angeles Times even bothered to check with me first. So, what am I supposed to do? Hire a bunch of lawyers and sue all of these newspapers and perhaps the ADL too? Perhaps I will. But I doubt that anyone who has actually been involved in a libel suit would suggest such a course. The civil litigation system in the United States has been designed for the sole purpose of enriching lawyers. And because of that, the system gives an overwhelming advantage to the litigant who has the most money to spend on lawyers. Perhaps some experienced civil litigation lawyer who believes this is a worthy cause will contact me and offer his services. But while I'm waiting for that, let me draw a few conclusions from this nasty business. First, I'll mention that I'm not particularly peeved at the ADL about this new report labeling me as the most dangerous man in America. That doesn't mean I won't sue them, but at least I know where they're coming from. The ADL is a professional hate organization. They are hate merchants. That's the way they earn their living, selling hate. Along with a handful of other Jewish organizations, the Simon Wiesenthal Center and Morris Deese's Southern Poverty Law Center, for example, the ADL makes its money by persuading Jews and wannabe Jews around the country that they are in great danger from people like me. But if everyone would just send them a nice fat check today, the ADL will protect these Jews and wannabes from me. And so the ADL and these other hate merchants put out deliberately scary press releases to drum up donations. If the newspapers exaggerate things a bit, why so much the better? That's why the press releases tend to be a little deceptive, why they are written in a way calculated to lead to misinterpretation. The ADL is the oldest and most powerful of these Jewish hate groups in the United States. It was founded in 1913 after a Jewish factory owner in Atlanta, Leo Frank, was convicted of raping and killing a 14-year-old white girl, Mary Fagan, who worked in his factory. The killer was sentenced to death by the court, and there was a great deal of publicity about the case at the time. Powerful Jewish organizations came to Frank's defense, and in behind-the-scenes maneuvering, they were able to persuade Georgia's governor to commute Frank's death sentence. This blatantly corrupt act by the governor working in cahoots with his rich Jewish supporters so enraged the populace that a vigilante group of citizens took Frank out of jail and hanged him themselves. The Jews, realizing that they had bungled the Frank affair, organized the ADL for the purpose of handling such matters more skillfully in the future. In the past 85 years, the ADL has grown to become the most powerful Jewish pressure group and lobbying organization in America. Recent ADL lobbying projects have been the promotion of gun control laws and of state laws banning military-style training by patriotic groups. The ADL's biggest project for this decade, however, has been so-called hate crime legislation. Hate crime laws attempt to punish a person for what he was thinking before or during the commission of an offense against a member or a group of members of an officially favored minority. For example, if you set fire to a synagogue because you don't like Jews, you're liable for a much more severe punishment than you would be if you were hired by the rabbi to set fire to a synagogue so the congregation could collect the insurance. Arson is no longer simply arson. Now there's arson and there's hate arson. And to decide which it is, the government may look into your personal taste in reading material, check into the type of music you listen to, investigate your political and religious affiliations, ask your friends about any expressions of politically incorrect opinions you may have made, and then present all of this information in court as evidence against you. The whole concept of hate crime is Orwellian. It turns traditional American concepts of law and individual freedom on their heads. But because the noisiest group of people pushing for hate crime legislation are Jews, no politician dares speak against it. Bill Clinton is the Jews' current point man on federal hate crime legislation. One category of hate crime is hate speech. In fact, the outlawing of what the ADL people call hate speech is their ultimate aim. Hate speech, of course, is whatever they find offensive or dangerous to their interests. I find a lot of films coming out of Hollywood these days offensive, and a lot of television programming. But you can be sure that's not what the ADL has in mind when it campaigns for laws against hate speech. The ADL is especially concerned about the propagation of what they consider dangerous ideas over the Internet and has been working with software developers to develop censorship programs which can be installed on any computer so that computer users cannot find any politically incorrect material on the Internet. Lobbying to stamp out the Bill of Rights isn't the ADL's only activity. They're also the largest and most effective domestic espionage organization in America. They have their spies in every community in America where there are Jews or wannabes. Reports go from their regional offices around the country to massive data banks in New York and in Israel, where the ADL maintains dossiers on hundreds of thousands of Americans. For example, if a state legislator somewhere in America makes a speech which a Jewish listener considers unfriendly to Israel, a report goes into the ADL data bank. If a businessman at a Chamber of Commerce meeting makes a joke which might indicate a less than worshipful attitude toward Jews, and a wannabe informs the ADL of the joke, that businessman will henceforth have a dossier in the ADL's files. Then, if that state legislator or that businessman ever runs for Congress, say, the ADL will search its files for his name, find his record, and launch a campaign against him as an enemy of Israel or as an anti-Semite. And the ADL has not hesitated to break the law in its spying activity. In April 1993, police obtained search warrants and raided the offices of the ADL in San Francisco and Los Angeles, where they found hundreds of stolen confidential police files. Some of these police files were on anti-apartheid activists in the United States, and the ADL had passed copies on to the South African government in return for South African police files on pro-Palestinian groups in South Africa. This caused a stink even in liberal circles, which ordinarily are pro-ADL. And this business of the ADL's stolen police files is still in the courts in California. So as I said, I understand where the ADL is coming from. I'm not surprised that they consider my broadcasts dangerous. I'm not surprised that they want to shut me up and are trying to do that with their current smear campaign claiming that I am linked to bombings and murders. I expect that sort of behavior. I expect lies of that sort from the ADL. What's really disappointing is the enthusiastic collaboration the ADL receives from the politicians and the media. The two newspapers I cited a minute ago, the Tampa Tribune and the Los Angeles Times, for example, are essentially Gentile newspapers so far as I have been able to determine. I may be mistaken, but I believe that the editors and publishers of these two newspapers are not Jews. So why do they go out of their way to exaggerate the ADL's lies about me? Why does the Tampa Tribune call the National Alliance a, quote, domestic terrorist group? Why does the Los Angeles Times say that the activities of the National Alliance include, quote, violent crimes such as robberies and bombings? Why did neither of these newspapers contact someone in my office and ask about the ADL's claims before printing them? Why didn't any of the newspapers which carried the ADL's attack on me mention the ADL's history of illegal activity? Let me tell you what I think about that. I believe that, in general, there are two factors at work here. I'll call them the corruption factor and the lemming factor. Let's look at the corruption factor first. It's the factor which motivates virtually all of the non-Jewish politicians, but also many non-Jews in the media. It's the factor which has led Bill Clinton to pack his cabinet with Jews and to promote every Jewish policy they have presented him with. It's the factor which has led New York Senator Alphonse D'Amato to serve as front man for the Jews' huge extortion effort against the Swiss. These politicians don't work for the Jews because they love Jews. Nobody loves Jews. They do it because they're corrupt, because they're willing to sacrifice the interests of their own people in order to serve the Jews if they believe that they can advance their careers by doing that. And many businessmen are just as corrupt as the politicians. They will do whatever they think is good for their business, whatever will give them the biggest profit. And some businessmen are in the media business. They understand that Jews buy more advertising than any other group. They understand that Jews own a bigger chunk of the media than any other group. They understand which side their bread is buttered on. And so when the ADL attacks me, these media businessmen are ready to fall on me like a pack of starved Dobermans in order to curry favor with the Jews. But you know, the interesting thing about these corrupt people, whether they're in politics or in the media business, as soon as they believe that the balance of power is shifting, they'll jump. They'd as soon tear apart the Jews as they would the enemies of the Jews. That's something to keep in mind as our struggle proceeds. Now, the lemmings in the media are more interesting than the corrupt businessmen. I've dealt with a lot of media people over the years, and one of the observations I've made is that they are the trendiest single occupational group in our society, even trendier than people in police work. I don't think I've ever met a journalist who had an original idea or who didn't follow the Jewish party line with a truly religious devotion. They all march in ideological lockstep. I think it wasn't always this way. Back before the Second World War, there were a few journalists in America who could think for themselves. H.L. Mencken is one who comes to mind. Nowadays, of course, the party line journalists shrink in horror and embarrassment from the mention of Mencken's name. Mencken, gasp, didn't like Jews and occasionally said so. I can't say that I really understand why journalists today are such lemmings, but I'm sure that it's more than the fact that Jews are so powerful in the media. I'm sure that it's more than corruption, as in the case of the politicians and businessmen. I suspect that today's journalists are people who have been more intensely socialized than most of the rest of the population. They are people who have been subjected to stronger group pressures to conform and have been selected according to how well they adapted to these pressures. Perhaps the journalism departments in our universities don't accept students who don't fit the Lemming mold. Anyway, journalists certainly do have a very strong tendency to stick close to the herd and to regard with suspicion and hostility anyone who has strayed very far from the herd. Now, this is an oversimplification, but I believe that the reason so many media people fell in love with Bill Clinton as soon as he appeared on the political scene back in 1991 or so is that they saw him as one of their crowd, their herd. Bill marched with us for the Viet Cong, they thought. Bill partied and smoked dope with us. He's one of us. And they look at me and they think, this guy Pierce is from the other side of the tracks. Instead of helping us trash the dean's office, he joined the John Birch Society. He doesn't belong to our crowd, so let's trash him too. Anyway, I believe that there's an element of that sort of thinking in the average journalist's mentality. Now, the bright side of this picture is that people who think like lemmings and have been conditioned by group pressure to have certain views can very easily be conditioned to have quite different views by the simple application of group pressure in a new direction. You won't be able to change an independent thinker's opinions this way, but if you put 100,000 typical journalists in a labor re-education camp and then select out 1,000 of them with leadership potential, straighten out the thinking of this 1,000 with 2x4s, then put them in charge of the others and put all except the 1,000 reoriented commissars on a diet of 300 calories a day, in a year every journalist in the camp will be reoriented. Skinny, but sincerely reoriented. You can turn them loose with complete confidence that they'll follow the new party line just as slavishly as they followed the old party line, even after they've regained their former weight. That's the way lemmings are. There's one other aspect of the ADL's operation which merits scrutiny, and that is its program of corrupting police departments around the country. At the press conferences they held in their regional offices last month, when they promoted me to most dangerous man, they had a number of local police officials with them. The appearance of these police officials on the platform, along with the ADL's Jews, tended to give the press conferences a sort of quasi-official or quasi-governmental atmosphere. And that undoubtedly encouraged the reporters present to accept the ADL's lies without question. Some of the police officials were there because they have political ambitions. They're planning on running for the state legislature someday, and they want the Jews' backing. Others were there because the ADL has assiduously been cultivating its relationships with police agencies for many years. The ADL offers anti-terrorist seminars to police departments and indoctrinates policemen with its hate propaganda under the guise of teaching them how to recognize and combat domestic terrorists, such as William Pierce. The ADL gets away with this despite its own record of criminal activity. The ADL has been able to persuade the cops to overlook its having been caught with stolen police files. That's a little frightening. If we had a government with integrity, the ADL would be dangerous enough. But with a government like we have in the United States today, every decent citizen must regard with horror the subversion of our police agencies by the ADL. I'll have more to say on this subject later, but for now, thanks for being with me again today.